great football team with a lot of moral fiber and a lot of character, and they showed it.
Shout, a Buffalo football podcast hosted by Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot.
No place else you'd rather be than right here, right now. When it's too tough for them, it's just right.
Presented by Syracuse.com and NYUP.com.
The Bills make me wanna.
We're back. It's Wednesday night. A lot of activity in free agency, in the NFL in general. It's Happy New Year. The new official league year is here, even though it's felt like the new league year since Monday morning. He's Ryan Talbot. I am Matt Perino. This is Shout, a Buffalo Bills football podcast, free agency day three edition. And we're going to get into all of it. The surprising return of Jordan Poyer, who signs back with the Buffalo Bills on a two-year deal. We'll get into that. We'll get into new polarizing wide receiver, Deontay Hardy. Wow, I haven't seen anything like this maybe at all in free agency over the last couple of years. We'll get into that. Some stuff, a little tour around the AFC East. Josh Allen has a new backup quarterback. But first, Ryan, we got to send out a save the date here, right?
That's right. Mark your calendars, Bills Mafia. 1 month from today, April 15th, we will be back at Wingnuts. Draft episode of Shout will be just a few weeks away from the 2023 NFL Draft. I think Matt and I will have a much clearer picture of where the Bills could be going, especially after all these free agent signings. So mark your calendars. Be there. It's always a good time at Wingnuts.
It is. I cannot wait. This last show was super packed. And I know I've gotten a lot of DMs and messages like, oh, I want to make the next one. I want to make the next one. So we're planning this one a month out. We're giving everybody 4 weeks to kind of plan, figure things out. It's going to be April 15th. Write it down on your schedule. Wingnuts, 700 Military Road inside the Froth Brewery. I mean, the beer is the wings, Ryan. Every time we go, we leave full and happy.
Yeah, so book the babysitters, get the dog sitter, whatever you need to do so you can be at this next event.
Speaking of some housekeeping items, it's a huge time in Syracuse.com, Syracuse basketball coverage. They've been working on, the team has, a new documentary. It's called Will to Win. It's a film from Syracuse.com on the Orange's 2003 national championship season. And it's set to premiere on March 29th at the Landmark Theater in Syracuse. So if you live in Central New York, if you live in Syracuse, huge Syracuse Orange fan. I know a bunch of people. There's a lot of crossover with the Bills. Head over to the Landmark Theater in Syracuse on March 29th. Get to witness this documentary. I know it's been in the works for months. They've spent a lot of time working on it. The official trailer is out right now. You can go check that out over on the Syracuse.com website. It's awesome, Ryan. I don't know if you've caught it yet, but I can't wait to watch the documentary.
Yeah, it sounds great. And obviously, if you're a Syracuse fan, that was a very special year in the team's history with everything with Jim Boeheim leaving. I'm sure it'd be a great doc to go to and see and witness.
Indeed. All right. So let's get into the big move of the day. Jordan Poyer shifts gears, throws it in reverse, backs it up, back in Buffalo, two-year deal. The numbers aren't out yet on the deal. That's going to be really interesting to see. But reportedly, Cam Wolf from NFL Network said that basically the market just didn't materialize the way that maybe he thought it would. And he knows the team in Buffalo, the organization, knows they're still in a championship window, and he just made the decision to come back to the Bills on this two-year deal. One of the first things he did was make sure to shout out Micah Hyde, who was lobbying on NFL Network's Good Morning Football last week. But Poyer's back in the mix. They lose Tremaine Edmonds, who gives this big goodbye on Instagram today. They're going to bring back Jordan Poyer. Your initial thoughts on it, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it's a good signing. And, Matt, I know like about a week ago, you and I both thought that both free agents would be leaving, walking out the door. And obviously, Edmonds getting a big money deal that the Bills couldn't match. made it easy for him to go. But Jordan Poyer, like you said, the market just didn't materialize. Mike Giardi, the NFL Network, I believe it was yesterday, said that the market was a little softer than Poyer and his reps probably realized. He was linked at one point to the Raiders, and the Raiders added a safety. Linked to Miami. Miami's made a plethora of moves on their own. And while Miami, you know, did make a push for Jordan Poyer, he ultimately decided to come back to the Bills. He looked at the Bills, like you said, that championship window's here. He has Micah Hyde here. He has that relationship with this fan base, and he wants to kind of finish the job that they've been trying to do for the past few seasons.
You look at some of the deals that have been had in free agency, and outside of Jesse Bates, who, and you can check this out over at spottrack.com. They do a great job of keeping all this stuff. He signed a 4-year deal with Atlanta. Bates did $16 million average annual, which is a huge number. The guaranteed money isn't in yet, but then you look down the list and, you know, the rest of the safeties, none of them really landing a monstrous deal. Von Bell, $22 million over 3 years, 7.5 average. Juan Thornhill today with Cleveland, $21 million over 3 years, $7 million average. Donovan Williams or Wilson, $21 million overall, $7 million average. Jimmy Ward, $6.5 million average. Apps, $6 million. So it's probably going to fall in that range. And for the Bills, this is a huge get because I think it allows you to kick the can down the road a little bit in terms of finding that replacement for Poyer. High too, to a degree. I mean, he's coming off a very serious neck injury. The jury's still out on what that's going to look like for him next season. Is he going to be able to come back, play all the snaps every single game? How is the injury going to hold up? Those are all, you know, I think valid questions at this point. But I think what it allows you to do is deprioritize safety. I mean, really, we were sitting here before this Jordan Poyer news, probably seeing like all of these names coming off the free agent board saying, the Bills might be in a situation where they have to get aggressive and prioritize the position in the draft. Now they really don't have to do that.
No, not at all. And, you know, my first mock draft right before free agency, Jamie Robinson of Florida State, I had him in the third round. And, you know, maybe third round is still a sweet spot for the Bills when it comes to a safety, if there's someone they really like in that spot. But you just said it. Now they don't have to necessarily prioritize it on day one or day two. It might just be someone with traits that they can develop over the next few seasons. Obviously, Hyde's only under contract for one more year as of right now, Poyer for two. So that's what kind of makes it interesting and doesn't necessarily force the Bills' hand this season, but they still obviously want to get some guys in the door that they can develop in due time, because eventually one or both of them will be out the door, and it could be as soon as 1 year. Going back to your point on these contracts, these safeties outside of Jesse Bates, it's interesting because you mentioned it, most of them were signing for about $7 million on average. It's been the same thing for a lot of these linebackers. It's been about 2 years, $11 million. There seems to be a market in terms of like where these players are coming in at. And once that market's established, you're most likely not going to get more than that unless you're an outlier, like a young safety like Jesse Bates, or a younger linebacker like Tremaine Edmonds. Once that market's established, you pretty much have a set point in place where players and teams kind of have to come together.
Yeah, and how do you feel like looking at this defense now without Tremaine Edmonds? Like our, you know, we have a shell of it, right? Like the starters, you know, outside of Edmonds are pretty much in place. You'd think, you know, Kyer Elam probably fits into that cornerback two role. If not, Dane Jackson's there. Christian Benford, you know, we could talk a little bit about what is the plan for Benford now? Is it still moving him to safety? Phil Lehman over on YouTube asked, still seeing a Benford move to safety. I think it's really interesting. This gives you a little bit more cushion. Like if they're bringing back Dane Jackson, Tre'Davious White's going to be healthy from the jump. You have Kyer Elam, who you spent a first-round draft pick on. That's three cornerbacks. I almost feel like it would be negligible not to try Benford at safety this like ramping up, because he's going to get more reps there no matter what. I mean, you could give him that as a second team reps in practice at cornerback, but you've seen what that looks like. I don't know if the same opportunity is going to be there for him there than there will be at safety. And if he ends up winning that number one depth safety role, Jaquan Johnson's still available, then it's about, okay, Poyer 32, Hyde 31. Haven't been able to stay healthy the last couple of years for 16, 17 games. Benford could be in a situation where he's asked to play, and you might want to start that sooner rather than later.
Yeah, Benford, I think, still makes a lot of sense at safety. I wouldn't be shocked if the Bills maybe slow play it, and at training camp, he's cross-training between the two positions. We've seen that before with some secondary members of the Bills where they have him play in both spots, and eventually it gets to be more of just one true spot. And I think that you said it, you know, Benford, more reps, more opportunities in the short term and the long term, at safety. So I think that just makes a lot of sense for him. You said it. These two veterans that the Bills have between Hyde and Poyer, they're both coming off the books within the next 2 years. Hyde's contract up next year. The reserves, you don't know where DeMar Hamlin is going to be in 2023 in terms of health. Jaquan Johnson's a free agent. They really don't have much depth back there right now. So I still think a move to safety makes more sense than not for Christian Benford.
Thank you so much for watching Almost 200 here on a Wednesday night, late edition. We decided to burn the midnight oil, not really the midnight oil. It's only 9:15 at night, but you know, go a little bit later, see if any moves trickle in here. We'll take a spin around the AFC East at the end of the show, but I want to flip gears here for a moment and talk about this offense, couple pieces to it. Number one, obviously the new wide receiver. Then I want to talk about the running back market. That's starting to heat up a little bit. And really the receiver market too, in general, there's some interesting maneuvers and that can kind of be a pivot point. Let's start with Deonte Hardy, formerly Deonte Harris. So if you saw this move come across the ticker or on your social media feed and you're like, Hardy, it doesn't really compute. I don't remember that name. He used to go by Deonte Harris. That was his given name. He changed it to Hardy in 2021 to honor his stepfather who raised him. Really cool story. I shared it on Twitter. You can read it. Friend of the show, Amy Juice, which was at NOLA.com. Really good piece. And so he missed most of last season, Ryan. He suffered a season-ending toe injury, played in four games. So you really have to use 2021 as that season, that sample size to really dive into. And some of the numbers, I mean, are really, really impressive. And this is a guy that brings a couple of things. Number one, speed. Number two, yards after catch ability. He ranks sixth in the NFL in 2021 in yards after the catch average, I think somewhere around 6.8 yards per reception. And that just goes to show his downfield ability. He's not a big guy. He's like 5'6", 170 pounds. He's not going to bowl people over. He's getting that run after the catch based on that speed. He ran a 4.39 unofficially at his pro day. I know there's a couple numbers floating around. 4.39 is the one that looked the most, verifiable. And so no matter what, you throw on the highlight tape of him, Ryan, and the speed is there, the playmaking is there, the downfield playmaking is there as well.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what his 40 time was, there are sometimes players who play faster than their numbers, but if it's a 4.3, it's a 4.4, whatever it is, he plays fast as well. There's plenty of highlights of him getting behind defenses. There's highlights of him catching a short pass and taking it the distance. He's someone that can really help this Bills roster in terms of the yard after catch. You mentioned it, 2021, he kind of looked like he was emerging. Pro Football Focus has a metric called the yards per route run. It's a figure that takes into account the number of snaps a player went into a pass pattern. It gives you an idea of their production, their efficiency, and he was in really good company between 2020 and 2022, despite missing most of last season with a turf toe injury. The only players ahead of him, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyreek Hill, and A.J. Brown. Right behind him, Devontae Adams. So, again, much smaller sample size when it comes to Harris. But if the Bills can unlock him, can utilize him, can give him a full-time role on this offense, there's some high upside there. I think, Matt, when the contract was first announced, and here's, I guess, your yearly reminder, Bills Mafia, don't overreact to contract numbers when they first come out. A lot of people kind of freaked out at the overall total. His cap hit this year is $3.7 million. That's next to nothing for a guy that can also return kicks and punts, all-pro and pro bowler in his first year in the league, despite being an undrafted free agent. He can bring that juice to you in the return game. I know they already have Nyheim Hines, but it gives them some versatility there, too, and some options. So I think it's a pretty intriguing signing, an under-the-radar signing that definitely most people were not expecting.
The details of the contract, which have been reported by multiple folks, SpotTrack put out a good tweet on it, breaking it all down. It's a 2-year, $9.5 million contract with incentive money, right? And, you know, there's some different roster bonuses, so on and so forth, that can escalate it up to a max value of $13.5 million. But you said it, $3.7 million cap hit in 2023, and it's ultimately a 1-year deal. If the Bills were to move on next season, he's got a 5.3 cap hit. The dead cap on a release would only be about 1.3 million. So they'd be adding 4 million back in salary cap space if they need it. And if it's something where you add him into the offense, it doesn't really work out. One of the other things that people have talked about is the issues he's had holding onto the football at times. That's all been in the kick game, actually, which is interestingly enough, 500 some odd snaps on offense, 300 some odd snaps on special teams. All 9 of his career fumbles have come in the kick and punt return game, which is interesting. I think 5 of them are just muffs. So I think that's gotten a little bit overblown. I tweeted this out earlier today, and I think it's pretty relevant. Obviously, a larger sample size for Hunter Renfro, right? Like, since 2019, he's had 11 fumbles. Well, the ball's in his hands a lot more. He has a lot more snaps, a lot more plays, especially on offense. But the point remains, like, you know, sometimes you got to take the good with the bad. And the big thing for me, Deonte Hardy comes with this low cost, low risk option. Had you have traded for like a Hunter Renfro to answer the slot problem that the Bills had, you're going to be paying him $11 million and probably giving him a new contract, which is going to be higher than what he was playing on already, most likely, because a lot of times guys that you're trading for aren't going to take less money on an extension. And then you're going to have to give up draft capital, most likely, to acquire him. So I feel like this was the fastest line to an answer at a position of need, one with a lot of upside. And one thing that you'll notice, Ryan, if you spend your time on Twitter, you know, sometimes these moves happen during free agency, and I feel like it's just like, depending on the move, it could be like a bunch of different firing guns at the same time, like people firing out takes, reactions, people that are familiar with players saying things. And one thing I noticed more than almost any other of the like lower tier signings, the people that came out to rave about the fit between Hardy and the Bills, you know, Nick Underhill, who covers the Saints in New Orleans, said he's always thought there was a ton of potential with this player and thinks that it's going to be, you know, a match made in heaven in Buffalo in the offense. I mean, those kinds of things, people that are familiar with the free agent players, I look at those things a little bit more.
Yeah. And you know, you also have the analytics sites, and I know PFF is not the be all end all, but you know, PFF Steve is what he goes by on social media. He said 800 yards, 12 touchdowns is like a projection that he could see Hardy having in this Bills offense. And again, that'd be pretty wild. It'd be a lot more than I think anyone would expect, but it comes down to fit. It comes down to talent. He turned down more guaranteed money, Hardy, that is, per a source, to come to Buffalo because he thought that his skill set was a good match for this offense. He thought that he could really shine here. And by the way, Chris Trapasso, a friend of the show, just had him on our last live show at Wingnuts. He was on with Matt at the Combine. He had Hardy on his like breakout team that he put together going into last season. Then obviously that turf toe injury occurred and derailed his season. But, you know, the upside is there. He can play inside and outside. I think the Bills want to get him in the slot. I saw a comment in here about him being wide receiver five. I could see him being as high as wide receiver 3 if he is as good of a fit for this offense as some people believe him to be. That's not writing off Khalil Shakir or Isaiah McKenzie or a draft pick that they could end up bringing in. But if he reaches that ceiling that a lot of people think he has, then the Bills could have uncovered a real diamond for this offense.
I think also somebody put it on I put up an article. I put up 5 thoughts and a grade on the move. And one of the comments or the tweet replies on it was, you know, mentioning his drop percentage. And it's really, really low. He's really reliable with the football in his hands and in the catch game, which is to me what you're looking for. I mean, one of the biggest knocks on Gabriel Davis this season was his inability to consistently catch the football. And I thought the drop conversation probably was a bigger deal than it actually was in reality on the football team. But it's something that if you're going to go out and you're going to bring in a free agent player, try to add him into the mix, into the offense, you're going to want to get a sure-handed guy. And I also like this idea because, you know, we talk so much about Paris Campbell over the last month or two. To me, this is probably going to end up being a more affordable option. And I think one with a little bit more upside. And I know he got hurt last year, the toe injury, but like, I think Paris Campbell had like multiple years of injury. So, I mean, if you were signing up for that, this to me is a little bit more of a 1 year. He got banged up. He missed a lot of time. I don't necessarily know if that's the story on Deontay Hardy. We'll wait and find out. A lot of upside here. And again, the risk is super low. And when you're paying your quarterback, I know people in here, I see it in the chat, like we talked about it a little bit already, the DeAndre Hopkins trade, you know, go out and trade for Jerry Jeudy, right? Like those are like splash moves that of course you're thinking on the surface level, like that's going to change the offense. That's going to give you another big time playmaker. There's problems with that too, though, Ryan. Number one, the money part of it. You're going to have to, DeAndre Hopkins makes a lot of money. You're going to have to fit that in, and you're not going to be able to spend in other places to fill important needs where I think they need to throw some numbers at some positions. That's number one. And number two, are we sure that Judy's a little bit, I think Jeudy would fall in line to a traditional wide receiver two role much more so than DeAndre Hopkins. Can you imagine DeAndre Hopkins coming in here, just killing it the first month of the season, and Stephon Diggs all of a sudden fading into a wide receiver 1B or, heaven forbid, a wide receiver 2 role like he left in Minnesota? You think that's going to fly with a guy after listening to him this offseason? I don't think that that's the way to go about it.
No, I agree completely. So I like the way that Brandon Bean's going about things so far in free agency. You know, he's come out and said, we don't have the money to take the big swings on players. We have to be smart. Obviously, they have a good scouting staff. They believe in the analytics. They believe in the numbers. They believe in the upside of the players they've signed, not just Hardy, obviously, like Connor McGovern. A lot of these guys that they're bringing in, they see the upside there. And the cap hits match what the Bills can do right now. So, you know, I have very few complaints in terms of the direction that this team is going right now. And obviously, like you said, there are still holes to fill, including one, Matt, potentially at running back. I wanted to get your thoughts on that now. We've had some running backs go off the board here in the last few minutes alone. James Robinson, someone I mentioned, is a potential target for the Bills. He went to the Patriots, 2-year, $8 million max deal. There, Alexander Mattison just tweeted out Skull, so it looks like he's going back to the Vikings, which is interesting because they've wanted to bring him back. That could mean Delvin Cook is going to be out the door sooner rather than later. So right now, you know, where do you think the Bills are at with the running back? Do you think that patience is kind of benefiting them? Obviously, Devin Singletary is still out there. Still a lot of big names available too. Correct me if I'm wrong. Damian Harris, has he gone anywhere yet?
Nope. Damian Harris out there.
Damian Harris.
Zeke. Well, I probably should have mentioned Ezekiel Elliott. He's probably more into the center conversation, right? That was his last snap in Dallas.
Yeah, right. Yeah, with Dallas. So, where do you see the Bills going right now in terms of running back? Is patience going to pay off, or is it just something where they're okay rolling with what they have right now and they're not going to be pressed into signing anyone?
What's up, everybody? Matt Parrino here, one half of the Shout Buffalo Bills football podcast. Today, I want to talk to you about Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 3 million members. It is the easiest and most exciting way to get in on the action while you watch your favorite sports and players. You just pick more or less on two or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Right now, get in on the playoff action and win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks as you and the world's best players take the game to a new level during basketball's postseason. The playoffs begin April 20th, play-in round April 16th, 17th, and 19th. Prize Picks has something for every sports fan, from basketball and hockey to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick LeBron, Caitlin Clark, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry. Download the app today and use code SHOUT, S-H-O-U-T, for a first deposit match up to $100. Download the app today and use code SHOUT for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more. Pick less. It's that easy. You know, I think they could get in a situation where Devin Singletary, a market for him, is so barren that, you know, he's willing to come back on a one-year, like, $2.5 million deal, something in that neighborhood. And I know that, you know, we've talked about it before. I think that, you know, you've had conversations with people in his camp, and I think that they probably hope for, you know, a market materializing that just really hasn't. I mean, if you look at some of the numbers, Rashad Penny, he's super banged up, so that's one of the reasons he doesn't get paid, right? But man, you get that guy on 1 year, $1.35 million. You get Raheem Mostert on a $2.8 million average annual. You know, Samaje Perine. Listen, I think you can make an argument that I'd rank Perine considerably a tier ahead of Devin Singletary because of the what he offers a team in December and January, the physicality, the size. At times he was almost their de facto one when Mixon was banged up, or, you know, really in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, he was the closer for them. So I really like that deal. Jamal Williams is a name that we've talked a lot about. Ty Dunn reported that the Bills were in the mix there. He ultimately ends 3 years, $12 million, which too rich for my blood, man, with the New Orleans Saints. I think anything over $3 million per season is you're spending dollars unwisely. And I think you could throw that in a better, you can upgrade, you can maybe go after another, you know, average level offensive lineman, pay a little bit of extra money there, and then go on about your day. I mean, I don't like the idea. I had some names. Obviously, we talked about Dante Foreman going into the free agency. I think I've really, and Bruce Exclusive, Bruce Nolan, the leader of the no running back at any time movement. I think I've come aboard that ship. I think they really should just let it ride. If you want to add a third or fourth wave running back in free agency, fine. But if you want to roll in with, you know, Hines and Cook, and you want to see how things materialize and maybe take somebody day three or even undrafted free agent route, I'm fine with that too.
Yeah, I'm okay with that route as well, because here's what's going to happen in the draft. Some teams are going to draft a running back, and then they're going to cut a veteran that maybe the Bills can then swoop in and sign that maybe is a good fit for their offense if that's the route they want to go. You know, Jamal Williams, love the personality, would have been a great culture, locker room fit. I think a lot of fans, though, were getting too, I don't want to say too obsessed, but they looked at the touchdown numbers and they thought that this was like going to be the next big thing if he came to Buffalo. A lot of those scores came from about 1 yard out, and he was that goal line back, and he was very effective in that role, but the yards per carry was only around 4 yards. Singletary has been more effective there. There's a lot of guys that have been a little bit more effective as an overall runner. When the Lions signed David Montgomery, there was a lot of people saying, you know, this is an upgrade for the Lions. National and local people, in terms of the actual running back himself, don't look at just one number. I get it. 17 touchdowns in one season is ridiculous. It's hard to do and replicate. But when they're coming from 1 yard out, that's a lot different than being an every down back where, you know, you're scoring them from all over the field.
You know, I see some comments in here. One of your free agency wish list guys was Dalton Risner, a guy that's still on the market. And you look at the market for interior offensive linemen, and it is a desert, man. I mean, you've seen Ben Powers get paid. Nate Davis got a decent deal at $10 million per season. I think that was probably a little bit more than I was expecting for him. But after that, it is just – it's barren. And, you know, there's a couple of names still kind of floating out there. The Trey Turners of the world, the Dalton Risners of the world. I mean, some interior players that I like. I mean, Wes Schweitzer, somebody that we didn't talk a lot about. I've been looking at him. His market value on SpotTrack right now is $13.8 million. And you're getting that. He is not getting that in this market. No. I mean, I think he's going to struggle to get 10. Probably going to struggle to get 8 at this point. If Risner ends up signing a deal somewhere around the 3 26 or 325, I mean, I think you could kind of come in here and get a Schweitzer somewhere around like 6 or 7. And I think that would be an absolute steal. Throw another guy into the mix, a depth option, a starter potentially. I like that use of money. And I don't think you should shortchange it. Like, go after guys, bring them in and say, go earn a spot. There's spots to be earned. I mean, really, there's 2 guard spots completely up for grabs. You could sell any free agent right now that there are 2 guard spots that are going to, the competition is wide open for. You could probably sell, you could definitely sell a tackle that at least one spot's open. Yeah. So keep running it. Keep running it if you're Brandon Bean.
Yeah, I agree. The way the market's shifting, it's shifting in the favors of the teams. You mentioned Risner, Isaac Siamalu. I might be saying that last name wrong. From the Eagles, still out there. Someone yep. that.
And he's a big ticket guy. He was supposed to be a big ticket guy.
And someone that during the Super Bowl week I put out as a potential target for the Bills on the Super Bowl teams. So he's someone to kind of keep an eye on. And you nailed that on the tackle position, too. I mean, you look at Spencer Brown. I know Brandon Bean has a lot of faith in him, a lot of belief in him. Said, you know, he had the back surgery last year. Didn't play in his final season in college. There's a lot of reasons why maybe he's struggling at this point, and they still see a lot of upside there. And upside's great, but you don't want to bank on upside. You want to have a legitimate competitor to that job. So hopefully the Bills can find someone at an affordable rate. Right now, you know, I think most markets, you can look at almost any position. It's definitely favoring teams right now rather than players. Tight end's been pretty slow going thus far. If the Bills wanted to go that route for a tight end too, but offensive line, I agree. Attack that position with some value, guys. You might be able to get some more big ticket players at affordable rates than you could have in recent years.
Indeed. Thank you so much for watching. If you're on YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to the show as well. Reacting to, I guess it's day one of free agency because free agency technically opened today. It feels like day three, right? Because we've been on the grind since Monday. Let's get into Josh Allen has a new best bud in the quarterback's room, another buddy that I'm sure that he went to Brandon Bean and sold him on it if he needed any selling. Kyle Allen, known best friend of Josh Allen, and they hang out together in the offseason. If you follow them both on Instagram, I believe their significant others are very close. A guy that has spent time in this league on 3 different teams. Carolina was his biggest opportunity when Cam Newton went down in 19. He started 12 games for them. And actually, I thought had a pretty decent season, all things considering. Nothing that blew you away. He's got more touchdowns career than he does interceptions, 26 to 21. He started 17 games over the course of his career. So he's got a little bit of experience. So if Allen goes down, it's a guy that not only is it somebody that is super familiar with Allen, is going to be good for him in the room, but it's somebody that has trained with him, has had all of these personal conversations with him as Allen has evolved into what he is in the league. And I feel like that's the kind of guy that if you need to turn it over to somebody for any amount of time, you want somebody that's ultra familiar with the system, the vibes, and what Allen does as a quarterback.
Yeah, and the cool thing is they'll continue training together in the offseason, not just in Buffalo. They're both Palmer guys. These guys were – during the COVID years, they were kind of in a house together along with Sam Darnold. So they know each other better than just about anyone, probably. So like you said, best friends. After the signing, I saw some chatter on social media about the Bills shouldn't just be signing Allen's best buddies to be quarterback too. Barkley, I know, is very close to him as well in terms of quarterback 3. But this is an upgrade at backup quarterback in my position in terms of who they had there last year in Case Keenum. I like Case Keenum. I like the experience that he brought, but he is a 35-year-old quarterback, and he kind of looked like a 35-year-old quarterback last year too in terms of the skill set, what he still has left from what we saw from him. So I think Kyle Allen, late 20s, someone that you said more touchdowns than interceptions, can come in here, be a little bit better of a fit for this team. I've been impressed with him when he's played. If you have to get him out there for 1 or 2 games, I think you can kind of stay afloat with a guy like Kyle Allen. Obviously, if any elite quarterback goes down this league, you usually can't depend on the backup to come in and carry you. Obviously, 49ers, Brock Purdy, that's a whole different matter. But usually, your season's over if your starting quarterback goes down. But in a pinch, in a short scenario, I think Kyle Allen can be a very good number 2 quarterback for this Bills team.
I'd also like the Bills to target somebody on the UDFA market, somebody that maybe has some traits – similar to the way that Josh Allen plays, like a Tyree Jackson from a couple of years ago. I really liked that approach. Somebody that you can develop over the course of the summer, just see what it looks like at the end. And if they hang around on the practice squad, fine. But to your point, I like Kyle Allen too. I think he's the perfect level of player. He's good enough to be a backup. And sometimes I wonder, like, what do people want in this situation, right? Like, do they want like a Carson Wentz or a Marcus Mariota who have been, let's be honest, like all due respect, complete failures in this league. And they're bringing the stench of that with them into the locker room, whether it be the, whether it be the failures on the field or just the attitude. Like Marcus Mariota, I mean, he's just gone through it. He's gone to places where he was the starter, then he was the backup, and then asked to be the starter again, then backup. Then he went to Atlanta to be the starter, and before long, they didn't want him to be the starter again. It's like that catches up with you after a while. And so I much would rather have the vibe check than the talent check. And I know that there's still, you know, truthers for Carson Wentz. I'm friends with one of them, Jared. My good buddy Jared, I just saw him down in Indianapolis. You know, I think he has a Carson Wentz jersey under his pillowcase or under the mattress. I don't know. He sleeps with it. He loved him some Carson Wentz. And I get it. Like, you know, you study a guy, you research a guy, and you believe in what they can do. He can't do it anymore. Whatever magic Carson Wentz once had, it's gone. And I just think you should kind of move in a different direction. And Allen, to me, is the safest bet and way to go for Brandon Bean and Josh Allen.
Yeah, and we don't have the numbers yet on Allen, to my knowledge, but he's going to be significantly cheaper too than a Mariota, than a Carson Wentz as a quarterback too, and that's something you have to consider with where the Bills are at. And I don't know if you're going to see a steep drop off in play. Mariota was intriguing. They're both intriguing because they were cut guys. They were guys that wouldn't count against the compensatory pick formula, which that might be out the window now that they re-signed Jordan Poyer anyways. But you said it, you know, the vibe. Marcus Mariota last year, after he got benched in Atlanta, he left the team for a bit. He was upset with how that went down, with giving Riddler the job. Is that someone you really want here? Obviously he would know that he has no chance of the starting job in Buffalo or in a lot of different spots, but that doesn't necessarily pass in terms of what this team is looking for players, in terms of what they want for this culture. So Kyle Allen's going to fit in just fine. He's going to be a very good and solid number two quarterback.
Speaking of fitting in, I'm very interested to see where the Bills fit into this new look AFC East now that it's undergone a facelift. I mean, there's two new stars in the division. I think the Patriots are, as much as they can, loading up. Like, I really do like the Juju Smith-Schuster addition after losing Jacoby Myers. We're going to talk about that a little bit, but let's start on Aaron Rodgers. Does this change things for you? Like, we talked about it, I think, on Monday about, you know, maybe the Dolphins being the team that really kind of elevated themselves. I don't want to say onto the Bills' level. They're the three-time defending AFC East champions. They have most of the same players coming back outside of maybe a Tremaine Edmonds. So I still think that they're the definitive favorite. But I think that Miami's right there. If they're down a tier, it's down a tier. Are the Jets in that tier now with Aaron Rodgers? And it looks like this deal is going to be done.
I would say they're pretty close to that tier with Miami, with Aaron Rodgers. The only problem I have with his signing is it's a very short-sighted move, Matt. Honestly, anything less than the Super Bowl title, what's the point of it? And that sounds wild, but this is a quarterback that's probably just said he was 90% sure he was going to retire before his darkness retreat. Comes back, hears that the Packers want to trade him, and now he's kind of fired up to play with the Jets, with his former offensive coordinator, Nathaniel Hackett. And, you know, listen, he's had a lot of success with Hack, and maybe he'll have a lot of success with the Jets. But he also said at his flag football that he, you know, tournament or competition that he had, you can't be an all-time great Jet if you only play for 1 year. So if that's what this is, if it's 1 year, so he's not sharing the Hall of Fame stage with Tom Brady, and he just wanted to get out there for one more year for that reason, I don't know. That kind of puts you back at square one year from now. Maybe you get to the playoffs as a wild card team. Maybe you surprise and win the AFC East somehow, some way. But if they don't end up with a Super Bowl after this move, I just think this is a wasted opportunity for them. I get they have a really good defense. They have some really nice young playmakers. Obviously, had a really good rookie class this past year. But the long-term view of it, I don't necessarily understand.
What path would you have wanted them to take?
One, if they really were serious and if they wanted to figure out the cap, you could have signed an offer sheet for Lamar Jackson. Could you not? Could you not?
That is a bold move.
No one else is going after him for some reason. So why wouldn't you at least try to go young and elite? I get cap space is a real issue. They have some big hits on that team. They have some guys they're going to have to pay in Waddle and Wilkins.
But then you're really on the hook like for that, for the foreseeable future. Like if you sign him to that deal, you better be sure that you have the infrastructure, the talent, the vision for your offense to support that particular player. And I just think there's so much. See, that's to me is the biggest piece of this Lamar Jackson thing that's not getting enough discussion on the national level, is that whoever ends up with Lamar Jackson, why the Ravens are the easiest fit and why teams like the Niners and the Dolphins, they make sense as well, is because they predicate their offense around a quarterback's ability to get the ball out of their hands quickly, run a little bit, and then, like, you know, get the wide receivers involved in various different ways, utilize the tight end, all those kinds of things. I just don't know if the Jets have the personnel to support Lamar Jackson. And are you going to say to does Nathaniel Hackett have some great plan for a running quarterback who he just technically had, and he basically turned Russell Wilson into some weird version of himself? I was not high on Russell Wilson going into the Denver year, but the way he played the game this year, there was something just completely weird about it. And Nathaniel Hackett was at the head of it all. So I just don't know if a team to pay the kind of money that you're going to pay Lamar, you have to make sure that everything else is lined up. And I don't think it necessarily is it for the Jets, as good as they are on paper, 2-53.
Sure. And I saw the Dolphins in the comment section. So I started rambling about some Dolphins players, but they're going to have guys on the Jets that they're going to have to pay big money to in the near future. I know Sauce was a rookie this past year, but he's already kind of proven himself as an elite member of this team. They have Garrett Wilson. They do have some talented players on both sides of the ball that eventually will have to get big money deals. But compared to your long-term approach or future, I just feel like a guy like Lamar Jackson would put you in a better boat. Or if you're looking for a stopgap, someone that's there for more than 1 year, and I know Tannehill's not an exciting name, but he's proven you can win with solid talent around him. You could trade for a guy like that. I just don't know if Aaron Rodgers for 1 year in New York is the route to go for them. Because, again, let's just say they have a nice season, Matt. They win 9-10 games. They go to the playoffs. Maybe they win a game. Their draft picks aren't going to be great that upcoming year. And who knows what they're going to have to trade to get Rodgers. So maybe they won't have a lot of draft picks or valuable draft picks next year. But I just think it kind of just it's a 1 year excitement move for this franchise. And that's all well and good. But where does it put you in 2024? At least with the Dolphins, I think that they're sustainably built to be a competitor to the Bills for the foreseeable future. Now, again, if Tua goes down with some injuries this year, I think then they can know, okay, he's not our guy. This is not someone that we're going to commit to long-term. I know the fifth-year option was picked up, but we're going to look for the heir apparent at that position because we have too much talent around this roster and we want to try to win a Super Bowl. The Jets, as much talent as they're going to have, they're going to be missing the most important position as well. But I still think that the Dolphins are in a little bit better spot. And obviously the Bills are in the best spot of all in the AFC East, having a franchise QB like Josh Allen. I have trouble going beyond this 1 year in my mind that this is a good signing for this Jets team. The fact that he had a wish list of demands, I like Alan Lazard. We'll see if Randall Cobb comes in, Mercedes Lewis. Maybe they can get Donald Driver, Jordy Nelson, and Jamichael Finley, whatever it is. You know, we can go way back on some of these Packers players if we need to, if that's what his wish list.
You see Shannon Sharp, I'm sure Sterling is still in shape too. Get him. That's even before Aaron Rodgers, but why not? Just go into the vault.
Into the vault.
So one thing I will say off topic, well, on topic, but off topic. I don't have the time with kids, but I would like to see, like, make my bedroom like dark and go in there and see how long I can make it. Like, I don't think I would make it 4 days. I don't know if I would make it 4 hours before I would just be absolutely bugging out. I don't understand Aaron Rodgers, the person. Like, I don't want to be nasty about it. Like, there's nasty ways I can go about it. I had some takes watching him spout on for 10 minutes before he got to any semblance of a point that anybody was listening to. But it's like he comes out with the first thing that he says and says, I was 90% sure that I'm retired. Dude, I'll tell you right now, and we've had this conversation before, then go. Because guess what? Nothing good's coming at the other end of that. Like, he was talking about, like, whether or not he felt like he wanted to do the work to get ready to play. So that's going to change over the course of the next 4 weeks, 4 months. I mean, you go back to last offseason, remember, like, he didn't want to show up for voluntary workouts. It was like all this stuff. Who knows if just the work ethic, the drive isn't there anymore. And I get it. Maybe he feels spited by the Packers and he didn't get to go out on his own terms. And maybe that's going to be the motivation, but it just doesn't feel right. So from that perspective, I agree with you. I would not take that chance on that guy, that player, that mess. But there's a piece of this that I don't know if I wanted to give 4 years to Derek Carr. I don't know if I want to give 3 years to Jimmy Garoppolo. I think I'd rather go big with Rodgers in a 1 year scenario, just throw a bunch of shit at the wall, excuse my French, and see if, you know, it sticks and go from there. And here's another problem. If you're the ownership, if you're Woody, do you look at your general manager, Joe Douglas, and have any confidence in him having in his ability to draft a quarterback this year or any other year? He's failed twice. So they're just between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, and don't even get me started on Joe Douglas. I like the guy. I think he's a fine GM. But, man, the way people were singing his praises, he had the easiest job in the NFL last year in the draft. He had Sauce Gardner fall into his lap at 4. He had every wide receiver minus Drake London available to him at 10. Any one of us could have made those moves that he made. Gardner should have obviously gone off the board earlier than that to Houston. They went a different route at corner. But yeah, I think he's okay at what he does, but he's failed at the most important position. I think that if the Jets don't have a great year, he could be on the hot seat going into the following season, or he might not be with this team into 2024.
My wife chiming in here, 4 hours question mark about the dark room. You fall asleep before the opening credits of every show we watch. So listen, this is a good point though. So we've been marathoning Better Call Saul. Love the show, but every time we put it on, dude, we get 3 scenes in, and I am just snoring. Ow. Yeah, it's brutal. Like I don't know what it is. That show in particular, we were watching The Last of Us, which is really good. If you haven't seen it, check it out. But that's a little bit more up-tempo. I could stay with it a little bit more. She also commented in my text message that we both look exhausted. And I tell everybody all the time, free agency is one of the real grinds of the year because we're staying up till 1. Like, you know, you go to bed usually a little bit earlier than that, and then you pick me up really early in the morning because you're up at 4 in the morning. So we have that gap of like 3.5 hours where nobody's watching for craziness to happen. We're not anticipating a Von Miller move, but if there is a Von Miller move at midnight, you know, I'm going to be calling you. I'm going to be calling Joel. I'm going to be texting Owen. It's going to be crazy. We're going to get Ryan Talbot out of bed.
That's right.
And we're going to do a podcast.
That's right. Yeah. Owen would probably be your best bet there. That kid has, the sleep schedule that I have. He's usually up around 5:30. And I'm like, no, back to bed. Got to go. But yeah, you could definitely, if there's a move like that to be made for sure. Speaking of TV shows, season 3, Ted Lasso, it's out now. I haven't started it yet. I can't wait though.
You haven't started the series?
The season? No. This season. I'm huge Ted Lasso guy.
Right. Okay. Now is the whole season out?
I don't know. I haven't even looked yet. I'm hoping not, but I think they have been releasing like the whole, and I binged like through it so quickly. So for that reason, I hope it saves me from myself and they do 1 a week or something.
I think we had a question in here. I didn't want to pass it over. Sir Nathan, he mentioned the BYU quarterback. Are you familiar at all with him? I have not watched tape on him, but Sir Nathan says Jaren Hall, he thinks he might be a player with Josh Allen attributes that the Bills can groom. I'll have to watch him. I have not watched, obviously, because of the team that we cover, we don't really watch quarterbacks, even at the top of the draft. I couldn't tell you even a lot about Bryce Hall and Will Levis and
Bryce Young.
Bryce Young, there you go. Bryce Hall. Who's Bryce Hall? thinking of Breece Hall, maybe. It's late, man. We've been grinding. All right, before we get out of here, I do want to touch on Meyers out to Vegas and Juju in. It looks like, based on Meyers' tweet, that the Patriots didn't offer him the same amount of guarantees that they'd offered Juju Smith-Schuster, which is interesting because I almost wonder if Jacoby Meyers is the better all-around player.
I think he is at this point in the game. Yeah, both in terms of overall numbers, it's like 3 for 33, but I think Smith-Schuster got something like 25 or 25 and a half guaranteed at signing, or not at signing, but 25, 25 and a half guaranteed, where who knows what they're offering Meyers. Meyers obviously did fine for himself in free agency landing with the Las Vegas Raiders. But yeah, I mean, some hurt feelings, I suppose, at this point where you have a market, you've been their best receiver, and they're not willing to pay you. Smith-Schuster's a fine player. He blocks well. He's a good receiver. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, while they're making moves in New England, they still seem to be trailing everyone else in the AFC East by a significant margin. One last thing about the Rodgers deal. What's going to be interesting is, when is this trade going to take place? In terms of the compensation, getting everything down, because I was reading something about if they trade Rodgers before like June 1st, is the cap that they're on or the hook for elevates from like 33 something to about 40 million. So they'd be better off holding on to him until June. And listen, he could still have workouts with his Jets receivers and things like that. But in terms of actually getting in there, getting into the facility, that could add an interesting wrinkle. It doesn't mean it's going to actually happen that way, but the Packers have a little bit of leverage right now if the Jets want to get this done sooner rather than later.
AJ Sabalski in the house in the comments. What's up, buddy? Yeah, Juju commenting here. He benefited from being the number one option after Jason or Travis Kelce, for sure. I mean,
yeah,
you know, having Mahomes as your quarterback, that is a huge deal. And now you're going into a situation. I know Parker is there, Hunter Henry. But in a lot of ways, because of the contract he just signed, the guaranteed money that they have in him, he's going to be expected to be the number one option in that offense. And I just don't know if that's Juju Smith-Schuster. And Parker is, he's just getting slower every year. I mean, he was all right last year, not great. And now you're going to be in a situation where it reminds me a lot of Pittsburgh the year before he went to KC, is where it's just, you know, they needed him to be the guy, and he never really could be that without Antonio Brown. So, AJ, I'm not going to put it on the up on the screen here, but he is correct. Cane sauce is greater than Chick-fil-A sauce. That is a great take, AJ. I want to make sure that I get that on record. Cane sauce greater than Chick-fil-A sauce. Can you comment on that, Ryan?
That's not what he put.
Oh, no, Ryan, that is what he put. You don't have to comment on what he put. You don't need to comment on what he put.
I like both, but I do prefer Chick-fil-A.
Ryan.
I like both, though. I do. But I like Chick-fil-A more.
Oh my gosh. This is a lot. This is a lot to deal with. So you're a big honey mustard guy, I take it.
Yeah, it's not bad. I actually have the Chick-fil-A sauce in my fridge. I buy it in the store. Yeah.
I like the Chick-fil-A sauce. Don't get me wrong. I just think I would literally drive 3 hours for some cane sauce. And also, I don't really have to because there's a place in town. It's called Frank's Gourmet Hot Dogs, right? So you see that place driving by, you're like, hot dogs. Like, we got like a place in town, it's called Ted's. I don't know. I'm 40 years old now. I think it's a little childish to go out to dinner for hot dogs. I don't know. But anyway, I took the kids there sometime. Is that it?
We've got the train. We've got the train.
Late night train.
Dude, the staple of the show.
Dude, the 10 p.m. train is, it hits different. So but I went in there and met the owner and sampled the food. Their chicken tenders and their chicken sandwich, they're just so bomb. And they have this thing that's called French fry sauce, but it tastes just like cane sauce. That's probably the same recipe. Like, it's ketchup, mayo, whatever else they put in it. It's delicious. And so I'm standing on that. Cane sauce greater than Chick-fil-A sauce. April 15th, put it in your calendar. Save the date. We return to Wingnuts. It is going to be a monster show. Obviously, NFL draft oriented. We're going to have probably some big announcement at that thing too. Get out there. I want to see all the hordes of Shout fans. We see you guys in this in the comment section every Wednesday night, all the shows that we do. Come on out, giving you guys all a month notice. Come hang out with us. We'll talk Bills. We'll drink some beers. We'll eat some chicken wings. It is going to be amazing. Wingnut 700 Military Road. Final thought, Ryan Talbot.
Yeah, final thought, Bills Mafia, keep those alerts on your phone. It's going to be fun for the next few days and weeks as the first wave ends and the second wave and third wave begin. Brandon Bean, I'm sure, will be making some more moves in the near future, whether it's guys currently on the roster. I see maybe a Daquan extension, Tyler Bass, McKenzie moves. Who knows? But between guys on their own roster and some free agent moves to come, it's still an exciting time if you're a Bills fan.
All right, everybody. If anything happens over the next couple of days, we'll be right back here talking about it. For Ryan, I'm Matt. See you soon.